part of the schedule is part of ASC.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, now he's going to get paid back for last week. That last week we were overtime, and this week in Mitzvah Shem, we should be under the time. Okay, we're going to start Halacha Gimel. We're going to real mamash literally start it. Okay, it says Sakinim, knives, Magilim, Bukhavishin, and Mutarn. You could tasher a knife with Hagola, and they become Mutar. Now, that sounds like a very obvious thing. Well, of course you can tasher a knife. Why not? Why should you think not? And so the real answer to that question we will not understand until we get to Halacha Dal and Halacha Vav. This is really an introduction. This thing about knives is really out of place. Really, the Machaber is still talking about Libun. Okay, the first bunch of halachas have to do with Libun. But in order to understand about Libun, we have to read Halacha Dal and Vav. So this is an introduction to that. So I'm not going to explain what the point here, this why this thing just plopped in here that knives can be kasher. You see a little remnant of it in the Mishnah Berurah about it, but it's really coming in the later halachas. When we do those halachas, more Dalit, we'll really understand that better what's going on here. But anyhow, so the Machaber says you can kasher a knife with Libun, with Hagol. And the only thing that I will point out now is that in truth, that din is dependent on kulis, at least the way they use their knives. Not the way we use our knives, but for the way they're talking about it, on kulis, and therefore there was a minhag to buy new knives, to not use old knives at Pesach. Okay, they used to stick their knives into the fire, like to poke and check something of this and that, which we don't really do so much. So there was such a minhag to have new knives at Pesach and not be somewhere on the kulis that are involved in this din. Okay, the kulis, again, that I'm not explaining, but there are kulis involved in this din, and that's such a minhag. Okay, so we're going to really talk about this two side points. That's as much as the Machabas were doing. Two side points having to do with this thing. One is, usually if a kli, this is the part from Yossi, usually if a kli is used for cold, how do you kasher it? You rinse it out, you clean out the ban, and you're ready. There's no bleeds, you just ban. But there's a special thing, which is that if you use a knife to cut something, then you need a higher level of cleaning. You don't need to just clean the kli. You need to do what's called ne'itza. Ne'itza means you stick it into the ground, into somewhat hard ground, 10 times, and that somehow makes the kli ready to be used. What's the reason? So the taz and the shach bring, it's a shalom and rishonim, what's the reason why a kli needs ne'itza? So why don't you just clean it off? Either because you need ne'itza, because there's a certain amount that the end gets stuck on. Since you cut with a knife, for whatever reason, it leaves a trace of a ban on it that doesn't get cleaned in the regular cleaning, or because even though you're cutting something cold, or minimally, or like lukewarm, such a thing still makes a tiny amount of bleah. And that tiny amount of bleah is taken out by what we call the itza, by sticking to the ground. There's no heat involved in that either, but a tiny amount of bleah comes out. Either way it is, we understand it as it's not from the Torah, it doesn't mean the Torah that's a thing called ne'itza. It's a Kabbalah Kachbalta. Just like the bleah went in, either the bleah went in or the end got stuck on through cutting something, then sticking something into the ground is a replication of that. It's a way of repeating that in a way from a heter to either get the ban off or somehow get this bleah out. Okay, that's a din in your day, the other simon, in Kuf Chafal, the other simon about Hagolah, it says this thing called ne'itza. So people assume that since this din is ne'itza, it's like made up by Chazal, made up in the sense that it's not the Torah, it doesn't say you should kasher with ne'itza. So therefore, what would be if you want to clean something in a different way? Instead of doing ne'itza, you came up with a new thing, which is what we're talking about this week. You want to use steel wool to clean the kli. Okay, you're not going to clean it regularly. You're going to use a really strong way of cleaning. You're going to put it through a CIP. You do something that's much more serious cleaning method. So this is meant. It's understood that this is practical. This is something that's practical. If you have an extra amount of bleach, a tiny amount of bleach, or an extra amount of ensa, you do like this. So if you do a really serious cleaning, then you manage to get it off better. So you don't still what's going to be worse. That's usually assumed. The case that we talked about this week, which is a common case of this thing in the Easter, is cheese wires, which is when you make cheese, the cheese comes out in these huge blocks. They want to slice it into smaller size pieces that are good for sale. So they, what they do is the knife stand still, and the cheese passes right through it. Same thing for potatoes. You just have the blade, in this case, it's like a wire, just stands still, and the things get pushed through, and they get sliced up. So when those things have to be cleaned, everything's cold. So in theory, the thing is you should have to do ne'itza. Ne'itza is ridiculous. You can't do ne'itza on a thin wire like that. It's not even physically possible. Forget about that. The company couldn't do it. So many will say is what you do is, it's fine. Just clean it very thoroughly. And that's all it means is just to do a really serious cleaning. Okay? So that's assumed that that's acceptable. Although, I'm saying you could question that and say maybe it's not as much. And in particular, I just want to...
I don't know if they do a type of ne'itza, and a type of scrubbing that qualifies as similar to ne'itza.
Right, okay, let me qualify. You need to do a serious cleaning onto it, and there are those who say that that's good enough and takes the place of what we call of ne'itza. You can't do ne'itza there, but you do have to do something. If you just do a regular cleaning, it's not going to do the trick. But there's also say, come on, the cleaning that we do, meaning using soaps and abrasives and things like that, it's the same trick. Sticking it into the dirt is really just a way of using an abrasive. That's what it is. I mean, when you brush your teeth, you use hydrated silica is what cleans your teeth. It's sand. Okay? It's an abrasive that cleans your teeth off. Okay? So the abrasive will clean, just like it cleans off the knife, by sticking the thing into the ground. So if I use a different abrasive, I use steel, but we'll do the trick also. Okay? Yeah.
But just when you say abrasive, you mean an abrasive material like steel, or you mean the cleaning agent, is it abrasive? Is it?
No, I meant the material like the steel wool.
Okay.
The soap is not abrasive. It has a ability to take off dirt. As a special, I just wrote down this in Simon Yud in your day, which is about Hilchos Shechita. It talks about two different kinds of knife. One knife that was used once for training, and one that was used many times. Okay. For whatever reason, the one that was used many times needs an itza. So it says, the first knife that doesn't need an itza, what do you have to do with it? You have to either rinse it off with something cold, or you can chenu b'davar kosher. Okay, you should scrape it off with something hard. The other knife, that one needs an itza. As if to say, you can chenu b'davar kosher is not an itza. Just rubbing it off with something rough is not an itza. Okay, so that's not a riot, but that sounds like an itza is very specific, and you can't just do it with something else that's hard. Okay. What I mentioned over here, because what did the Mechaber say? We talked about this right early in the week. What does the Mechaber say? The Mechaber says you have a knife, you want a kasher, what do? You do hakol to it. He doesn't say you have to first do ne'itza to it. The regular rules, of course we're going to see, that's actually the end of this thing, that you have to feel clean before you kasher.
What does it say about ne'itza?
It's in Yerdea, Kuf Chafal. It's in the other seven of Hagol's Kelm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's here, sitting here in Hilchos Shechita.
Mm-hmm.
But over here it just says this, you have to kasher. Now, of course, before you catch something, you have to clean it. That's understood. But if there was a din that you have to do ne'itza before you do hagol, then it would have to say here. This is a din about a knife. It's talking about a thing that needs to be kashered because it's a knife. It should say, sakinim, first you do ne'itza, and then you do hagol. So this is a gemara. This line in the Shulchan Aruch is not his name. Yeah, this is a gemara. So why doesn't the gemara say that? What happens to that din? And the implication is that the hagolah does the same thing that ne'itza does also. I mean, if you're doing ne'itza, you usually do that for cold. You cut something cold, now you want to use the thing for cold, so you have to clean it off, not with regular cleaning, but with ne'itza. But the implication is that if you do hagolah, that's even more than ne'itza. Of course, you have to do a regular cleaning, but let's say the question is, this is the easier way here, because there's a little bit of blia that gets in with cutting. According to those who shine, there's a little blia, so then we understand that hagolah is going to take out that little blia also, because that's silly. But the implication is that even according to the others, that the pshat is that there's a little bit of be'en that's left on it, this is not loads of be'en that's gunky pieces on it. You cleaned it off yourself. That was obviously you cleaned it off. So it's a thin film that's left on. And the others, it can aware that we assume that it melts away. As a dogma to this, there's a din that you have a pot, and the isser spills over the edge of the pot, and it falls into the fire. If it's a tiny amount, the fire burns it up, and there's no bleeds underneath it. The little bit that drips over gets burnt up. What we're going to see later, if you have a clean that has been on it, you can put a fire onto it and burn it up. So this is not fire. This is liquid. But the implication is that the Hagolah does the same trick for that little bit of it, and it melts it away, and it takes care of the problem.
You heard anybody was foolish that says that? Or just?
No. I also saw another, the Supreme God, who also talks about doing Hagolah. If I remember, I can't say this for sure. If I remember, he had earlier been talking about Ne'itza, but we have to check that again. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I did not see someone say that before. But it's the other way around. It's the implicit that everybody here talks nothing. No one ever says that on a knife that you're doing hagol to, you need it. If you're using it cold, you do itza. And if you're doing it for hot, so then you do hagol to it. That's what you do in your house. Right? If you want to cash your knife, what do? You do hagol to it. Like it says in the Shulchan Aruch. But why do you do hagol to it? Why do you do itza first? Because the itza is reserved when you're not going to do a hot kashering. If you're going to do a kashering with heat, then you don't need to do itza. And it's only for the cold cases. That's what Muharri says over here. Okay, now the second thing is that again, I said to you that there are coolers to the way of kashering a knife that we're going to talk about at a different time. But the Mishnah Berurah says they have to do with hetera bala, which is a special cooler for, potentially a cooler for chametz. The Mishnah Berurah points out that those coolers all apply. Everyone agrees that those kulas apply when you're kashing something from milchigs or from fleshigs. Okay, if it's either milchigs or fleshigs, it's hetero. This for sure is about kulas there. So Mishabur uses that as a he mentions here that you should just hold on a second. Even though that's true that in din there are kulas of kashing from milchigs or from fleshigs, or for that matter from milchigs and fleshigs, should I say? Because if a kli is a fleshig or kli, and then it's ended in your mind by mistake you use it then for milchigs, so it's milchigs and it's fleshigs, but it's not trade. It's not possible to hold. It's milchigs and fleshigs, so it has kulas because it was used for milchigs, it was used for fleshigs, it was only used for heter. But the Mishabur brings that in tough tests. Okay, Simon Tuf test is in Hilchos Yontif. It's a Tuf Kuf test, Hilchos Yontif. It says the Magen Avraham brings a minig there to not kasher from milchigs to fleshigs, or from fleshigs to milchigs. Okay, what's the reason? The Magen Avraham says the reason is because if you would be allowed to kasher, if you'd be comfortable kashering back and forth, you'll end up having one set of dishes or one set of pots, and you're setting yourself up for problems. One day you're going to forget. I mean, obviously, if you have only one set of pots, who's going to remember whether the pots are fleshigs or the milchigs, and you're going to end up using them incorrectly. Okay, so that's what the Magen Avraham says such a minig. The Mishmaru also brings that the Chassam Sofer says that once you kash something, let's say for Pesach, okay, so you have a pot and you kash it for Pesach. Now, once it's kashered, it was a fleshig of pot and it's kashered. Once it's kashered, it's parav. It's completely nothing. That goes back to the way it started. So now, if you want to make it milchigs, that's okay. You didn't kasher it from fleshigs to milchigs. And of course, this goes together with the.
What do you say once it's trade?
Once it's parv. You made a kashrut of Pesach, now you can make it to whatever you want to. Because now it's parv. And of course, this goes with the minig. The minig is not to have one set of dishes. So if it happens that you kashrut it for Pesach, so that's not the case we're talking about. The case, the minig is to avoid people having one set of dishes.
Right.
So you kashrut it anyhow.
It becomes treif.
So also the same thing beef became treif. Right. And not only that, the Prima Gautam said that's what people used to do. If they wanted to make something that was milchus, fleshigs, or fleshigs, milchus, they would make a treif first. They would on purpose make a treif. They would on purpose make a treif. Now they say, hey, the kasher. Once they kasher it, then they're allowed to.
Right.
Okay? So now, as strange as that might sound, it's really not so crazy. Because the point here is that the minhag is to not have one set of dishes. Okay? No meshugim is going to keep treifing up their pot every time to go from milchigs to fleshigs. That's not, the person doesn't run a house like that.
Right.
So the point is, it accomplishes the goal, which is you will have two sets of dishes. You won't keep on kashering back and forth. And therefore, so if you want to make it treif, then go ahead. No, that's okay. Okay.
What about an industrial setting?
We'll get that. Hold regular. That's exactly what I'm headed to. Regular. But the of course, just as a side point, you have to be careful if you want to make it clean treif and with kasher, you should not end up being mavashal basa b'chol. Okay. In your zeal to make a treif, most people in their house don't have treif. They have milchigs and they have fleshigs. So you have to make sure if it's a milchig kli, wait till it's ein binyamin and then cook the fleshigs in it and not do it right away. Okay. Now, another thing that the Magen Avraham is, what is he doing in some tough kuf test? What in the world is that's not Hagol's kennel? What's the Tilchus Yontif? What's he doing there? Because the Mechaber says like this. The Mechaber says, if this is a Shavuos related halacha, if you have a kli, like a baking sheet or like a some kind of a thing like that you use, it's not really that. It's like a something hot that you cook on, like a hot plate, okay? And you have a cast iron pot, okay? You have a hot plate, and you use it to cook a milchig dish. And now you want to cook a fleshig dish on it. You're allowed to kasher that dish on Yom Tov. Why? Usually not allowed to kasher kelim on Yom Tov, because you're fixing the nerach in the fact, it looks like you're fixing the kli. What else are you doing? Boiling up pots of water. But this kli, the way you use it is you have to heat it up before you put the food onto it. It has to be preheated. So when you stick it into the oven to preheat it and make it ready for, make it, and you want to preheat it to kasher it, to the outside looking in, it just looks like you're about to cook your food. That's the way you do it. You heat the thing up and then you pop your food onto it. So therefore, it's not nerach k'masak, and nothing looks wrong about what you're doing because you have to preheat it anyhow for cooking. So therefore, you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov. So the Magen Avraham says, hold on a second. That din that the Mechaber says is not our minhag. Our minhag is we don't kasher things from milchigs to fleshigs. So here the Mechaber, his case is that a guy had a milchig, you bake milchigs, a cheesecake on it, and now you want to make a fleshig, a pashtida, some kind of a meat loaf, whatever, a knish, and therefore, you're switching it, but that's not like our minhag. That's the Magen Avraham tells us his minhag as a kasha on the Mechaber.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he says. So he says, and the Magen Avraham answers, what the Mechaber says is not a stira to my minhag. Because in the case of the Mechaber, you always, that's the way you always use the kli, you always heat it up like this before you bake on it. Hol gufa is why it's not nirik mesaken. Since you always heat it up beforehand, it doesn't look strange what I'm doing, that I'm preheating this thing and making it burning hot before I put my food onto it. That's how you always use this kli. That's the nature of the kli. He says, so the minhag is to make sure you don't get into trouble by having a kli that sometimes mostly inflates and use it for the wrong way. Here you'll never get into trouble because you always kosher it before you use it. It's built into the way you use the kli that it's automatic. You have to kosher it before you use it. So therefore, there's no kshas that I'll maybe use it for the wrong time because I'm going to kosher it every time I use it. There's nothing to worry about. That's why in that case it's mutter, but the essence is such a minhag. Okay? What did the Magen Avraham not say? Okay. Magen Avraham didn't say that when you do libun, it's mutter. Mechaber is talking about doing libun. He didn't say if you do libun, then it's mutter. He came up with this answer that it's always a kasha, okay, which is a question on those who say even though there's a minhag not to go from milchus to fleishig, but if you want to kasha your oven, you could do that. Yeah, you can kasha your oven from milchus to fleishig back and forth. That's not a problem. And one of the explanations is, oh, because it's libun. So libun you're allowed to do. You're allowed to go back and forth. So the whole minhag is for hagol, not for libun. If you do libun, then you're allowed to. Okay, the case that the Magen Avraham was talking about, where he brings the minhag and he asks it as a kasha, is a case where the person's doing, that's the case of the guy's doing libun.
So why should that be anyway? What's the svara that if the libun is...
Why should it be different? Okay. I don't know. I would only say, as you would say, is the minhag is cases of hagol. As if
right.
But svara-wise, it makes no difference. It doesn't make sense that there should be a difference. You could argue differently. Maybe you'll tell me my oven doesn't need to be kosher at all. Maybe that's a different way of arguing, okay? But that's not, I didn't hear that, someone say that. Okay, but anyhow, I'm saying it's...
So there are those that say you can use the same oven?
Not the same, that you can kosher your oven from one to the other. And the question on that
people
is...
People do that, it's very common.
That, but why? The question is that it's not like the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham, minute.
Yeah, who's looks like they get to work for this.
Okay, so the Magen Avraham's minhag is that you can always cover your food, right? You can cover your food. You can make it your oven flashes and cover if you have to make something muchas.
Right, but then sometimes you need to certain foods that you need to have.
Yeah, so you can't make cheesecake. Right. So you can't make cheesecake in your oven. Okay. That's not like the end of the world.
It's gonna spill over?
You put something underneath it, put a piece of foil underneath it, and you cover the pan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying is that there are those people who say that, and it's L'chayr, the Magen Avraham's case that he's talking about, and the kasha he's asking is about Liban, that's exactly what he's talking about. Okay, what you said, I was about to mention anyhow, which is that Rabbi Shechter likes to say, if you think about the svar of this minute, the svar applies to a person who would do this all the time. He says, but if someone has a mistake, they have a power of a knife, okay, and by mistake, they use it to cut a piece of hot meat. Okay, by mistake, one of the things that used for the other one. Okay, so then there's no such minhag. The minhag is for when the person should be regularly in that kind of a mode of switching back and forth. But if something goes wrong, like in your case, it's spilled. Okay, he covered his cheesecake, he covered his lasagna, he put it into the oven and he baked it. And somebody knocked it over and the whole thing fell over his oven. He made his oven tray. So then there's not such a minhag. The minhag is just for the case of a person doing this every day, or just being in that kind of a mode of having one pot and using it for both. But if there's a mistake happens, that's a...
There's no problem with going for flesh with the pirate, anyway.
Why not?
There's no going for flesh with the milk. You want to use the pirate, there's no such a thing.
What's the minhag? Don't use kalim. Don't kasha kalim back and forth, because you're going to end up making a mistake. You're going to forget its status when you go from one to the other. If you have a pot, and today I make lasagna in it, and tomorrow I make chicken soup in it, so then I'm going to keep eventually lose track of what's going on. So the same thing as the pirate. What's the difference? The kli that if I use it for milchiks and parv, or milchiks and fleishik, kli from fleishik, that's the same thing.
If I'm going back and forth between milchiks and parv, what can go wrong?
I can end up using when it's in milchiks, using it for parv. I can go and cut my, chop up my, the vegetables for my lasagna. I can chop them up when the knife is really milchiks, when I really meant I would only do it when it was in parv.
Well, and then what? You might eat it with fleishiks.
And cook with fleishik.
I saw before she said that you could go from parv to milchiks.
Who said that?
It's on the Oscar, what's his name? Kasher's book.
Okay, so what?
Ray Forster.
Oh, Ray Forster, okay. So we'll have to look it up. Okay, so what the Magen Avraham says, L'chayr should apply in either case. You're saying it's because it's a harder chash. I have to make the mistake and then use it for the other.
It's some milchiks to fleishiks, and it doesn't say.
I know, but think about what the reason is. But the reason is that you're going to setting yourself up to make a mistake. Okay, I will look at Rabbi Forrest and see what he said. We can see what the reason. Okay. The last thing I just want to say is that we have a question. That here's this minute that you're not supposed to go back and forth between two different things because you might use it wrong. And the question is, and the question is going to be better than the answer, is...
What I said is not a question. So you're assuming that you can't go from Paris to Mufa.
Yes. My question is going to be, even according to you, is, well, reasonably according to you, is what goes on in companies? How come in companies they go, they hashgacha all the time? An awful lot of time is spent, hashgacha is spent on helping companies go back and forth from Mufa to Paris. We're overseeing what they're going back and forth, Mufa to Paris, kosher treif. We don't have that much milk inflation. That doesn't happen so commonly. So if you can go from milk to power, yes. But
yeah, I don't know. Milk is power inflation.
If you think about what the Magen Avraham said, if you're going to end up having one kli, one reactor, one kettle, quote, whatever you want to, and you're going to use it for two different things and keep cashing back and forth, you're waiting for a mistake to happen. Well, that's exactly what goes on. The companies are supposed to use kettle for these. It's milk and then you cash it and it becomes power. And mistakes happen. That's exactly what the Magen Avraham says. Because you're waiting, you only have one kettle. So you, sooner or later, you're going to forget, and someone's going to make a mistake. Or in this case, the person who's doing the cooking doesn't really care about kosher. So sooner or later, he's going to have a pressure, and he's going to do something that he wasn't supposed to. Or he's going to forget, or whatever. Because if I could forget it in my house, whether something's milk inflation, the person in the company, for sure, he's going to forget about it. So what happens?
Because you don't have a mashkir in your house.
Okay, so the answer, okay, that's the best answer I've ever heard. Again, I think the question is better than the answer, is that over here, there's someone whose job it is to watch someone, an outsider, someone who's not involved in the rush and the pressure of what's going on, who's on the outside, whose job is specifically to watch that you only use it milk to milk and parif for parif. And that he's watching his logs and his kasherings and the mashgiach comes down. So there's like a whole system built to come check on this person. So the chashash that he'll make a mistake is in the regular day-to-day jobs. But it's like saying, can I eat before I daven? If I have a shomer, so this is like my shomer. You know, so I'm doing the chashash for the minute. Okay, so maybe that's the answer. I'm not convinced. I'm not so moved by it. You know, there's another answer also. You know, we talked in halacha aleph. Maybe Kohen don't have to hug him. Yeah, maybe we can give hashgacha something we don't have to do.
Well, we know the goal is, the agenda is to get to the answer that we could do it.
Then we can close down, right?
We're in big trouble.
Then we'll have much more time to learn. But, okay. So you could say it's for many of the companies, they're not Jewish. Maybe they don't have to do the minute. We talked about halacha. Maybe you could give hashgacha to someone who's being over on a minute because he doesn't have to do the minute. You know, okay. That will only help for most of the companies and only helps according to some people who are like that. But it doesn't help, obviously, for a lot of cases. So maybe that's the answer. Someone on the outside. Okay, so then think about it. So if we count the other person on the outside, so that means is if a Yid owns a place that doesn't have hashgacha and you're trusting him, then he shouldn't be kashering back and forth. And then you have to, you know, focus on what cases are. Okay, not so many cases like that. The guy owns his own little restaurant. Then you know, maybe that doesn't switch back. Okay, anyhow, even after all that having been said, I think the question is still worth asking, maybe better than the answer.
No, no, no.